This podcast is presented by Pacific Office Automation, proud partner of the Arizona Cardinals. Learn more at pacificoffice.com.
Pulled in by Wilson for a touchdown. What a throw by Kyler Murray facing pressure. Connor to the five and into the end zone for the touchdown.
Welcome to Cardinals Underground, presented by Pacific Office Automation. Visit pacificoffice.com. Problem solved.
Middle of the end zone, picked off. Kaiser White with the interception.
The latest news and notes from the insiders who cover the team.
Touchdown, Kyler Murray. That defender is in multiple pieces.
Oh, that was nasty right there, right?
Slam to the ground by Buda Baker. Like a torpedo, he came flying into the backfield.
I ain't scared of nobody.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
All right, class, let's put all materials away right off the top. Paulie, pop quiz with a question. Shouldn't be too tough to answer, but here we go to see if you're paying attention, alert, and or if you've been daydreaming at this point. Here's the question. It goes something like this. What would you consider more meaningless, mock drafts or draft grades? Darren, go.
I'm glad you gave me a choice, Paul, because if you just would have said, what do I consider more meaningless, that could have gone in a bad direction.
For me?
Maybe. I'm not saying that for sure. Okay. What's more meaningless? Probably the grades?
I was going to say mock drafts.
Really?
Yeah.
Why would the grades? I mean, actually, I see them basically exactly the same because...
Nothing really matters.
Well, they're both based on the exact same thing, right? Aren't the mock drafts and the grades based on the exact same thing, which is outside people...
Forecasting
and analyzing these players without knowing what the teams thought.
Yeah, but the mock drafts are so much more entertaining, and they're therefore, henceforth and heretofore, more worthwhile. That's my contention.
Why are they more entertaining?
Because it gets you through. You know, the draft grades are almost, okay, I guess a necessary nuisance, but it's already happened. You don't really need it. The mock drafts, we need.
Need is a strong word, Paul.
You needed them. You went through about 60 mock drafts.
I'm not saying. I'm just
true.
Saying.
Once again,
need is.
Once again, Darren biting the content hand that feeds him here on Cardinals Underground, brought to you by Pacific Office Automation. So,
I mean, if you got a guy who's hooked on drugs, you don't say they. I mean, he needs them, but does he really need them?
Yeah. That might be a little strong. What about snacks? This draft was marked by snacks.
What are you, Monty Ossenfort now?
That's what I'm saying. Monty Ossenfort cited that it was so fast and furious in round three with four third-round picks that he got behind on his snacking, although he did admit a bit of humor there that he could afford to miss a snack or two. And then we saw Keon Coleman at the end of his, at the beginning and then at the very end of his very notable press conference say, hey.
New Buffalo Bill, by the way.
Yes. Say, are those snacks available for yours truly? And he made a beeline for the table. So apparently the Bills provide snacks on a regular basis at their press conferences, or is that just a...
I mean, that's something you can delve into, Paul.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
Okay.
I think if you bring it up with media relations here, they'd love to hear
it. I would support that, Paul.
That's true. I'm going to launch an I-team investigation
into
that.
I'm always in favor of more snacks.
That's good. Okay. All right. So here we go. Monty Hall, and we do mean H-A-U-L for the second year in a row, although our Jim Omohundro, I believe, coined that. This time, the Hall was marked by keeping his own picks, adding one, which was sort of, the whole stick and pick. I was really looking forward to the trade and cavalcade, but I couldn't really use that hashtag. Although, did you guys see that just recently here today, Mike Reese of ESPN reporting that both the Giants and Minnesota offered multiple first-round picks to the Patriots? And in fact, the report says the Giants' offer was number six overall and next year's first-round pick just to come up from 6-3. The Patriots said no. Minnesota offered 11-23 and a 2025 round one pick. And the Patriots said no.
Which tells you what? It tells you that, like we were saying before, the problem with saying four QBs in the top four picks, not everybody's going to like all the QBs. And it's obvious that those two teams were trying to get Drake May.
Unless there was a similar offer made to the Arizona Cardinals war room, and there just has been no report documenting thereof.
Perhaps.
...
I thought that article did say something along those lines with the Arizona, did it not?
I did not get all the way through it, so maybe at the very end it did cite the Cardinals war room. However, to your point, Danny, I do believe that the Cardinals decided that in this case, quality exceeded quantity. And it'd be sort of like, here's my analogy, okay? What's the best way to say this? If you go into a renowned Italian restaurant that's known for the eggplant parm, ding, do you order the fettuccine Alfredo? Of course, you never order the Alfredo because that's not real Italian food, but that's neither here nor there. We'll get into that at a later time. This draft was known, among other things, for the elite class of receivers. And when you had a need for wide receiver one, once again, you order the eggplant parm because that's what the restaurant is known for. So you stick with the receiver and you go with Marvin Harrison Jr.
And again, I think it's what we talked about. It's not just he's a good wide receiver now. I think the projections of how long he will be such a good receiver really makes it worth the quality over quantity of trading down and getting more picks. I mean, it's been a minute since the Cardinals have had a long-term true number one receiver who was reliable and consistent. And it looks like that's what they're trying to get back to.
I'm trying to, would Danny eat eggplant parmesan? Would you have that?
Yeah, I would.
Okay.
I like eggplant. I'm not really a picky eater.
I didn't say you were.
Okay.
By the way, Darren, I'm offended you would even pose the question as if it was if you had elite eggplant parm in front of you.
There is someone in our department who feels very strongly about eggplant
from
parmesan
Canal Street,
and not in a good way.
I'm not saying
on Little Italy. I mean, come on. Now.
I will say that A, you're right. I would definitely have it. But B, and I certainly don't want to get derailed. But hey, that's what we're here for. I've become one of those people that I'm not a big fan of eating Italian out. It's not high level enough type of food that I want to pay that kind of money when I can make something similar at home. Just doesn't do it for me.
Paul, you need to connect with Kyle in our video department on how he feels about eggplant parm. And I want to watch the conversation happen.
Okay. All right. I'm trying not to be offended by Darren's...
By the Italian thing?
The characterization, the scouting report that Italian food isn't high enough and worthy
for
an investment in a restaurant.
A lot of times when you spend good amount of money, like $25 plus for an entree, it's like the sauce is watery The thing is, Paul's like, I would never order the Alfredo because when you go out, the sauce is always watery. Like, it just doesn't stick on the noodles. Like, it's
I wouldn't have it just because it's horrible for you, but that's another here and there.
Okay, well, I'm trying to agree with you here, Derek.
Okay. I'm not. I'm moving this along. I am asking for an impression.
I knew he might get heated about the Italian restaurant thing, but I feel strongly about that.
Gotta do breathing exercises right now. So I manage my emotions, focus right now. I don't want to draw flagrant of any sort.
I'm not trying to say Italian. Okay. I am, in fact... I have Italian ancestry, but I just don't think going to an Italian restaurant is the right thing to do.
You should just go to Italy. The food's really good there.
Yeah. Someday I'll find out. Until then, I want to find out what you guys thought of Marvin Harrison Jr., because I do believe all of us had a chance to interact with him one-on-one. Right, Danny?
Yes.
Okay, so what'd you think?
I really enjoyed my interaction with him. You can see that when it's said by scouts, which we saw online before the draft, and then hearing from Awesome Ford about the maturity level and Marvin Harrison Jr. already being a pro, you can feel that in the interactions you have with him. The humility as the fourth overall pick, the first non-quarterback, a wide receiver drafted, and to be as humble and down to earth as he was. I mean, there was in my sit-down interview with him from the studio when I'd asked a question about pairing up with Kyler, and Harrison's answer was about how he wants to do what he can to help Kyler reach his own goals. I was very impressed with, one, the accolades that he's leaving college and coming into the pros with, and then, two, the way he just carried himself was with the media. He was just, it was good interactions, good vibes from him.
I would agree that I had a couple different interactions with him, asking questions. I did a story on azcardinals.com basically about how it's inevitable he's going to get some comparisons to Larry Fitzgerald, but he basically said he's okay with that because of his dad. But, you know, that's just, he's like, I'm going to do my best to try and outdo Fitz, just like I'm going to try and outdo my dad. And I got a chance to talk to Fitz about it too. And he was basically saying, look, I mean, here's a guy who has grown up with whatever he needs to do, he's grown up with that knowledge in his house. So, like, there's really no advice you can give him, and he carries himself so well. One of the things Fitz noted, and I haven't done enough of a deep dive, but Fitz was like, I've read all this stuff. I'm like, here's a guy who went to Ohio State with a bunch of really talented receivers. There was a couple times when, and I know it's been brought up, like, some of these, like, Max Melton. Was it Max Melton who was talking about how Marvin didn't have big games against
right.
him? But I'd like to go back and look at those games, because did Max Melton shut him down and Rutgers was in that game, or did they just get hammered because Ohio State beat him up?
Running the ball.
Well, and or there's other receivers. One of the things Fitz said was, like, Marvin's not the type of guy who was complaining about targets or catches. Like, that's just doesn't seem to be who he is.
Which yeah. I thought was an interesting point, because when Harrison was asked in the press conference what he feels the most underrated part of his game was, he said competitiveness. He said, I'm not the kind of person that's really going to show emotions on the field. You're not going to see that from me, but I am as competitive as they come.
In fact, for a guy who has every right to be a diva wide receiver, he was anything but. That's my initial takeaway from him. You're a high school player who was coveted throughout the country. You led your high school to 3 straight state titles and a powerhouse. And then you come in, and as a true freshman, you're on the same field competing in the same position room. That's what I asked him about when he came into the radio studio was, let me get this straight. You're a true freshman. You're out there competing with Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, Jackson Smith and Jigba, all first round picks. And he sort of cut me off and said, absolutely. He said, we used to have a board in the receiver room at Ohio State. We would compete every day and moving names up and down the board. And I mean, think how much better that must have made him right out of the gate, competing with those guys.
I keep thinking about, because there's a little kerfluffle going out there with Shedeur Sanders and the son of Deion Sanders, and some things going on social media with an ex-Colorado player. And I mean, some of this is, I mean, he probably didn't learn just football from his dad. He probably learned how to handle stuff. And Marvin Harrison Sr. was a relatively quiet guy. You know, Paris Johnson had told me beforehand that before the draft, that if they got Marvin's not, he's not going to be Paris. Paris is pretty good with us. And I don't know how he's going to be day to day in the locker room. But I know the whole point of the day he was here was to talk to all of us. So maybe that's a little different. But it did feel like I don't know if he's going to fill up your notebook, but I got the same vibe you did, Danny. I'm like, good dude, wanted to interact with everybody. When he first introduced himself, he kind of came bouncing up, going someplace else. And I'm like, hey, Marvin, I just want to introduce myself. I'm Darren, blah, blah, blah. And he stuck out his hand. He goes, well, hello, Darren. I'm Marvin. I'm like, okay. That was
it's good.
A little more. But it was great. It was great to hear.
Well, I asked him about his dad, and I said, I'm sure you've been asked a million times about the pressure of having Harrison on the back of your jersey. And he nodded like, yes, like, oh, here it comes again. So I purposely didn't ask him that. And
he said, I did, so I'm sorry about that.
And so then I just threw out there, okay, you know, what did you get from your dad that most of us wouldn't presume? And he talked about the work ethic, which reminded me of the quote from his head coach at Ohio State, Ryan Day. I thought it was a really good quote. When you get elite talent, and then you get that sort of discipline and work ethic that goes along with it, you get Kobe Bryant, right? When you get that's what you get.
Yo, no, it's funny that you mentioned that, because one of the quotes that I remember Marvin Sr. saying the day of the press conference when we were talking to him is, somebody asked him about, have you had these conversations with your son about, you know, what he's about to go through, whatever. And he said, we've had lots of conversations. He knows the mission. I'm like, okay.
And he said he's trying to exceed his dad's exploits and accomplishments, which is saying something. I mean, there's no doubt about that. I mean, if you want a refresher on Marvin Harrison Sr., it's right in front of me here. 3-time All-Pro, 8-time Pro Bowler, Hall of Famer, 13 seasons in the league. More stats than we have time to list. What was interesting was when Paris Johnson Jr. joined us on stage at the draft party, because there's Marvin Harrison Jr. from the draft, and he's up on the Jumbotron, say hello to the Red Sea, and then we brought Paris Johnson Jr. up. Hey, remember this guy? And then, boom, we gave Paris a mic, and he asked him a question, and just instantly Marvin just became so much more easygoing and relaxed. He could, you know, decompress a little bit. And then afterwards, Paris said, and I thought it was one of the quotes of draft weekend, about the prospect of Kyler and Marvin Harrison Jr., quote, I think that's the most explosive combination in the country. You have a quarterback that nobody can touch. Now you have a receiver that can't be guarded. As a tackle, how can you not want to block for that? End quote. So there you go, a little hype man in Paris Johnson Jr.
You guys can tell me how you feel about this, but there are times when guys are teammates in college or they've been teammates before and they know each other and they're friendly. You definitely get the vibe like him and Paris and Marvin are buddies.
Well, they were saying that this has been like 2 years in the making of Paris wanting to come to Arizona and then, you know, talking to Marvin about wanting to come to Arizona. So absolutely, I get that feeling. And Marvin had said he's excited for that first touchdown where Paris can hoist him up in the air the way they did at Ohio State together.
So anyway, his first start was as a true freshman in the Rose Bowl. For those who didn't see this, that's after Olave and Garrett Wilson opted out for the NFL draft, and he caught 3 touchdowns in Pasadena as a true freshman. So, once again, to come full circle, he has every reason to be a diva receiver, but he appears to be anything but. Because that has been a chronic happening at that position for decades. So that is very interesting. Now, what it does for the Cardinals' offense, we had Trey McBride up on stage, and Trey half-jokingly said, if he wants to take all the double coverage that I saw in December and January, be my guest. Absolutely, that'll open things up for everybody else. And before we move on to some of the other players, especially near the top of the draft, I want to go near the bottom of the draft and just a couple other receivers they picked up. Tajon Palmer, and then the undrafted guy Xavier Weaver out of Colorado. I mean, these guys have some crazy numbers in terms of measurables.
I did. When you start looking over the list all the defensive backs they took ran fast. I mean, there's definitely a type, and obviously you're trying to find fast receivers, but fast defensive backs, but you can really tell what kind of some of the things they were looking for. This obviously size with the cornerbacks, but the receivers.
Size with the receivers. They're all 6 foot or above.
And we've been talking about, Danny's been talking about that for, we've been talking about, I keep wondering, like, what could that look like? Somebody asked me in the mailbag this week, like, what is the receiver room depth chart looks like? You know, and we're way early, but like, what is it going to look like? Oh my God, I think Michael Wilson and Marvin Harrison are in there. And then beyond that, I don't know what it's going to look like. I mean, we've talked a lot about Greg Dortch, and I do think ultimately Greg Dortch will be in the mix. But you've got some other bigger receivers. You've got Chris Moore who comes in and gives you some size and can play some special teams. I don't know what that might look like. And does Dortch have the kind of size that they're going to want out there for the stuff they want to do?
When JG said in one of the press conferences after the draft about how there's definitely a pattern.
Yes.
He said to the media, do you notice a pattern? ... Almost like let the media fill in the blank. I think you nailed it with the DBs and the receivers. That's part of the pattern. I think we can all agree that when they say all ball, they're looking for dudes who are deadly serious about the profession, right?
Yeah, and it was funny. That was when he said there's a pattern, it was to a question about the all ball type thing rather than measurables. And I happened to run. So there was the fans draft party on Thursday, and then there was a organizational party after the draft was over to kind of celebrate the end of the draft. And I happened to run into JG that night, and I brought up the part about there being a pattern, and we talked about it, and it goes back. I mean, he didn't say exactly like it's all ball, but like you can tell when you talk to these guys on the conference calls and when we've interacted with them, like, okay, I'm not going to name names, but there's been players in the past that we've come across that probably wouldn't have fit that description, that probably wouldn't have paid the price of admission, as like Jonathan Gannon likes to say.
You left off the fact that you were talking to JG on the dance floor right in the middle.
I was not. We were most definitely not
with the glow sticks.
Wow.
Okay,
with the glow sticks.
Okay,
really?
Darren.
Okay.
Wait, you were out there, Paul. I saw you.
I didn't know Darren was out there with the glow sticks,
right,
so I missed
the
that.
Dance floor.
I missed that.
I was implored by a couple people to get out there, and I most certainly did not.
I haven't seen Darren out there since the karaoke in Nashville, so that's now.
That was a good time.
As for the
except for the COVID.
The pattern, if you will, I think there's another bullet point under pattern. If the category heading is
yes,
there's a pattern, there's one more bullet point.
Yes.
It's a big man's game.
Yes.
I think they believe that. And you see it at receiver. You see it at corner when they can. But you most definitely see it at tight end, at running back, the O lineman, the D lineman they're going after. They believe it's a big man's game. And the more physical dude wins, and we all saw the physical style play they want to enact, they were able to do it much more effectively on offense than they were on defense. But what you saw them do, especially in that defensive line room, I mean, if I'm Derek LeBlanc, the D-line coach right now, oh my goodness, right? You're looking
with the free agency moves and then Darius Robinson.
You talk about before and after, right? It's the big red reset button. Look at his room now. And I tried to ask this question to Kyle VandenBosch, and we ran out of time. Craig Riolu would have just canned it for a little bit on the Red Sea Report. What I wanted to ask, former three-time Pro Bowl pass rusher Kyle VandenBosch was, how much does this revamped D-line room unlock your edge rushers? So you had a Justin Jones and Bilal Nichols, and L.J. Collier is healthy, and then, boom, first-round pick Darius Robinson, okay? Then you bring back some of the other guys like Dante Stoles and Roy Lopez, we presume. But what does that do for guys like Zaven Collins in B.J. Ojulari, who, by the way, round one pick, round two pick, a Mack Wilson, a Xavier Thomas in round five? So if you fortified and bolstered the interior D-line, how much does that trickle down to the outside?
I think I'm saying this on, I believe, cover two. Maybe Cardinals.
Trying to keep track of all your appearances, Danny.
Look, only this last week, Darren, I have lost count. But the point I was
join
making.
The club. Just check with your publicist.
Join the club.
The point that I had made that I'm going to bring up now is the point that Arizona is in this transition phase and you have to address essentially every spot on the defense. It's not realistic to expect a team to make changes that will be long-lasting at every single position in one offseason. That's not realistic, even from a financial standpoint alone. So it's very clear that where the Cardinals decided to start was the D-line and the free agents that were brought in and the draft picks and the cornerbacks room with your DBs. And you have enough strength from your starters at linebackers and safety. The big hole still was your pass rush. Now, they did address it a little in the draft, but to me, this still makes sense of if you can really lock down the rush and the coverage, that'll allow you to open up and get to the quarterback more, and I would expect that to be the number one priority. I say this a year out, in next year's offseason, of where I would expect the money and the attention to be. So this makes a lot of sense to me from a collective standpoint of the moves made in free agency, the moves made in the draft of where the priorities lie and the trickle-down effect of really beefing up your D-line and how that is going to open up things for your pass rushers.
Here's something that I saw that somebody floated on social media that I thought was an intriguing concept. And it kind of plays a little bit to what you're talking about and why like a Darius Robinson might mean a little bit more. Who's going to be in this offense? I mean, he was listed as an edge, but he can play on the line, and he's going to be more of a beefier guy rather than a guy coming off the edge. But the idea is where we are in the NFL, and I've seen that because of scoring and everything. Like, edge rushers are still important, don't get me wrong, but they've been mitigated to a certain extent because so many offenses are going to quick throws. Where you need the pressure is up the middle these days. And that's one of the reasons the defensive tackles are getting more money. And it's one of the reasons teams are focusing on it a lot more because you need some interior pressure to really make it work. Because if you're relying on edge rushers alone, it's probably you're not going to be able to get home enough.
No, it's a valid point. No question. I mean, you play a quarterback like Kirk Cousins, right? How many times are the Cardinals and he's getting the ball out in less than 2 seconds and all of a sudden almost it completely negates your edge guys to such a large degree. So, in fact, you talk to any edge rusher, and what's the first thing they look at on game film? How long is a quarterback holding on to the football?
Yeah,
that's what they look at first. Like, okay, all right, I got a chance this week. Or, yeah, I'm not going to have much of a chance this week unless for some reason somebody blows a route and the quarterback has to hold on to the football. But in terms of the edge rushers, is there a player who presents more in terms of potential and or intrigue than Xavier Thomas, round 5 pick, number 138 overall, age 24, out of Clemson? the fourth fastest 40 at the combine, Xavier Thomas. It went Chop Robinson 1, Jared Verse 2, somebody else 3, and then Xavier Thomas.
Wait. Somebody else.
He was like a lower round pick. I mean, okay, I'm just work with me here, Darren. This is a 5-star recruit. Somehow, some way, Marvin Harrison Jr. apparently was only a 4-star recruit. This guy was a 5-star recruit and was rated ahead of Micah Parsons coming out of high school. It went Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields in this class, Xavier Thomas, some dude at 4, and then Micah Parsons at 5.
That's some dude.
Yes.
He keeps showing up.
Well, if you can sign some dude, you might have something there. It'd be a good undrafted scene. And by the way, Xavier Thomas on Micah Parsons, because they're buds, quote, "We always competed against each other, but we always had the same abilities in regards to how he played his position and how I played mine." Yes, I'd say that's worth a 5th-round pick to find out.
I said in my mailbag, it's funny you bring him up, because somebody said, well, he was kind of insulting you a little bit, Paul, and it was about nicknames and stuff. And he's like, how about we find out who your player to watch is this training camp or whatever? And however else I might have answered that.
You sure that wasn't Danny under like a pseudo name?
I'm not going to say
ripping
one
me
way or
in
the other.
Whole Paulie Pigskin breakout player.
I have fun with it, Paul. I enjoy it.
Right. By the way, the early returns, the Paulie Pigskin breakout player camp, right now I'm leaning towards one of the two Xaviers, Xavier Thomas or the undrafted receiver.
Xavier Weaver. But I said in there, I'm like, out of all the draft picks, that, I mean, again, Marvin Harrison is Marvin Harrison. That's no fun to actually say your first round pick. But Xavier Thomas is a guy that, A, for all the reasons you've mentioned, is intriguing, and B, they're seems to be some opportunity there because no one else who plays there has really seized upon it per se. So that's a guy that I'm going to watch closely. And we're not, here's the other thing. And this is a warning more than a week out of rookie minicamp. And then the beginning of all the offseason work on the field for in phase 3 and mini and the regular minicamp and all that stuff. We're not going to know anything about these guys. We're not going to know until deep into training camp. So we're not going to be able to sit here and say, after 3 weeks of offseason work, Xavier Thomas, it looks awesome.
You mean it'd be irresponsible for me to say that Zaven Collins would play the rundowns and then here comes Xavier Thomas on a sub package on a passing down?
Irresponsible? First of all, if you said that, you'd probably get fired. But besides that, I would say that you probably aren't going to know for sure.
Okay.
I will say, too, of Xavier Thomas's story of kind of just being hit hard by COVID physically and mentally and sharing that story, and something that Austin Fort touched on in his post-draft press conference was just his ability to prove that he can come back and that the ceiling is high. And when you're looking at other draft picks, which I know it's really only looking at 1 year, the players that this front office has kind of taken a bit of a chance on, whether that is something along these lines of kind of proving that you can come back or coming off an injury like a Garrett Williams, like a Michael Wilson. I mean, look at the upside that their research and all of the steps they've done throughout that process has paid off for them.
For those who aren't familiar with Xavier Thomas, in addition to being one of the nation's highest rated recruits, he was a freshman All-American at Clemson, won a national title, and then went into year two. And to hear him tell it, he did a lot of stories, and I read a few of them, and he just said, you know what? I had a lot of yes men around me year two. He said, I thought I was 3 years and out. I was going to be a first round pick. COVID hit, Danny, and then he had a tough time with it. He got COVID. He was out of football, had a tough time with it, and was really open about how he battled some depression, definitely battled weight gain, said he was over 300 pounds. He plays around 245. He was over 300 pounds. In fact, Dabo Swinney to USA Today said within the last year, I'm super proud of XT, they call him, Xavier Thomas, because he got to a place that a lot of people don't recover from. He was in a very dark place, but he communicated and sought out help. And Xavier Thomas has been very open about how no one should hesitate to do exactly that. That's what he did, and he benefited from it.
Absolutely. I do think it was interesting seeing the remnants of the COVID years in the draft this year, of how many of these picks have been in college for 5 or 6 years of these extra years of eligibility, and how mature these players are, how many of them not only have degrees but have their masters because of how long they were in college, which Austin Fort said was not an intentional pattern. It just kind of happened that way.
Two of my best friends growing up, Matt and Adam, I texted them. I said, you guys each spent 8 years apiece at San Jose State. Too bad it had nothing to do with COVID. It had to do with other reasons. It took you guys 8 years at San Jose State to get your bachelor's, and we won't go into the details of why that was. So, yes.
We were talking about people we're hanging around with, Paul. Is that you want to go into anything?
No,
here?
Like a lot of these guys, I was able to overcome my surroundings, right? I was able to get away from those bad influences.
Sorry about that.
And so now I try and overcome, you know, the crew I'm with here on Cardinals Underground.
I saw that
brought
coming
to you by Pacific Office Automation.
I walked right into
you
that.
You know, we've gone entirely too long without talking about Tip Reimann, pick number 82, round 3 overall. Danny,
I'm not going to say this, but I called it, Paul.
No, oh,
did
come
I
on.
Not?
How? What? Huh?
Oh, somebody's not
I'm
watching
confused.
Our video.
I did. I had tight end as one of my top sneaky offensive priorities.
Okay, all right.
Draft primer, Paul.
I see.
It
all
just
right.
Learn it, live it, know it.
The offense that is run and how often. The Cardinals were in 12 or 13 personnel, which was 32% of the time, fifth most in
good
the NFL.
Knowledge. I did not know that. Let me write that down.
They lost their blocking tight end in Jeff Swaim, who got hurt last year, and they did not re-sign in free agency. And this is what Tip Reimann brings you, is your blocking tight end. He called himself a mauler. He said that he likes to put his hands on people and control where they go. I mean, hello. That sounds amazing. That's exactly what you want out of a blocking tight end. I'm not sure yet what the plan will be in terms of if he is your number two pass catcher from that room. That might be an Elijah Higgins and the role that he grows into. Reimann didn't really have a lot of those opportunities in college. So it'll be interesting to see how this coaching staff envisions him and how comfortable he gets and how that part of his game progresses. But to me, this makes a lot of sense with how the Cardinals like to use play action, how they like to run the ball, and what you were still missing in that tight end room behind Trey McBride.
When you talk about his receiving ability and what it might be, and they didn't use him a lot, you're right, and I do think he's coming in to be a blocker, at least for now. But I saw a stat. Apparently there's a way to measure athleticism, and they've been doing it with through, you know, the drills you run and everything. And they've been doing it since it was either 87 or 89. Not really sure.
Wow.
But there's been a total that they've measured of 1,199 tight ends that they've put through this scale. Tip Reimann is 10th in his athleticism.
Okay. is this analytic known as the RAS?
I think it might be.
Because the director of football ops and player personnel at the Shrine Bowl tweeted out, the Cardinals got one of the most underrated tight ends in the draft in Tip Reimann, among the top athletes at tight end ever.
Yes, that's the one.
And the Cardinals had a lot of representation at these bowl games, Senior Bowl, the Shrine Bowl. And look, I mean, it's not just about what you can see on film. It's how coachable you are and how you handle yourself. And it looks like having those experiences, not necessarily a direct correlation, but I would imagine gave the support and validation that maybe the scouting department was seeing.
Yeah, Drew Terrell, the Cardinals wide receivers coach, was the OC at the Shrine game. So he got a whole week with him, you know, on the field, behind the scenes, which Cardinals consider ultra important. Anyway, this director of football ops went on to say that he's a super unique and still ascending tight end. Think about it. He was a walk-on at Illinois and ended up a team captain. And there was another next-gen stat athleticism score for just this year, had him rated ahead of Brock Bowers, the 13th pick overall. So in terms of intrigue, now I'm not forecasting, okay, any sort of NFL glory. I'm not saying he's the next Gronk or anything.
You're not even saying he's Xavier Thomas.
I'm just saying he's going to get us through the preseason, okay? We didn't get the quarterback I wanted because I wanted some quarterback questions at least, if not controversy, something to get us through the preseason. But now dudes like this with this unknown upside, okay, I said to Kyle VandenBosch on the Red Sea Report, I said, I'm going to have to dust off my old word jackstomp. When it comes to Tip Reimann, we're going to have to use Jack Stomp a couple of times.
We're going to have plenty of talking points to get us through the preseason just looking at that running backs room, Paul. Don't you worry.
Yeah, that's true. And by the way, one last note. After talking about Tip Reimann, Kyle VandenBosch, and what I believe is the ultimate compliment, said Tip Reimann is the kind of guy that if I would have been rookies with him in the same camp, I would have fought him all the time. I said, what was the over-under on training camp fights? Kyle VandenBosch, right, is a surly young guy in the NFL, and Tip Reiman. I said, three? He said, three? You mean three in one practice? So that's good. That's good. Because we only had one training camp fight that merited somebody getting ejected last year.
It was
Elijah Wilkinson against L.J. Collier. They had the walk of shame off the field all the way
far
off.
Far walk of shame.
Yeah, and down the ramp. Because they were on the north side, they had to walk all the way down to the south side and down the ramp and out. So
good memory.
Yeah. Anyway, that was... okay. You made the transition. Trey Benson. Where does Trey Benson rank in terms of the whole intrigue scale?
Pretty high for me.
What is it about him? I mean, think about it. You want to cram it vertical. We know that. That's the Cardinal style, running the ball. Well, you got a guy at 6 foot who was 216 at the combine, 221 at his pro day. I'm curious what he's going to play at. But we do know he clocked a 4.39 40, one of the fastest among all the running backs.
A little smaller, but closer to a James Conner build than maybe a Michael Carter, bigger than Amari DiMercato.
Yep.
He just seems like the type of bulldozing running back you would want to have in your room. And I'm not saying that as a replacement to Conner in any way, who's coming off a 1,000 rushing yard season despite not even playing every game. I just think it's good to have some competition and have some options in there, especially if you need to give Conner a break for a snap or two, and that would make sure that you do not have to make any changes to the plays that you are running. I think that there is opportunity for Trey Benson to kind of work his way up the depth chart in that room, and I think it's good to have competition in that running back's room, whether that's, you know, upping your blocking ability or the way you're running downhill, whatever that might be. I like this, though. I like that you still have some versatility with how these backs are in that room, of Michael Carter, again, being a little more agile, more slippery, DiMercato being your blocking running back more so. But I do think that there is opportunity for Trey Benson to work his way up that depth chart.
I mean, not only is he running between the tackles, he's a home run hitter. Some of those chunk runs he's ripping off.
Yeah, and if you're watching on video, we have some of this stuff, but I will say he's barely touched in most of these highlights, so I'd like to see what happens when he actually has...
Come on, Darren. That's because he's getting to the edge.
NFL, you know,
he's
beating defenders, the defense that he's got to get past.
You know, he's getting... I know. Might have been against Appalachian State there.
I'm not sure, but... I doubt that he's a home run hitter, but again, you're going to be dealing with defenders that aren't going to... You're not going to have these gaps.
I said earlier, I'll say it again. You know, you're getting a steady diet of James Conner, right? You're a defense. And then they bring in the rookie who runs the 4.39 at over 220 pounds, and he's got fresh legs, those rookie legs. That's the last thing you want to see as a defender. That's called wearing down a defense in the second half.
Marvin Harrison Jr. with 48 catches as a rookie because they're running for like 3,000 yards.
Right. So
don't upset the fan base, Darren. They're still riding the high.
My bad. No.
Anyway.
I would never do that.
Trey Benson, average better than 6 yards a carry in college. Kyle Vannebosch had a great stat. He had like 10 touchdown runs of over 30 yards apiece. So, okay, a home run hitter indeed. So, you know, he's going to get plenty of carries in the preseason. So there's that. And then there's who's blocking for him. And Isaiah Adams. This was interesting. I never heard of this guy. I'm guessing most people have never heard of an Illinois offensive lineman.
I did, but that's because I did 1,000 mock drafts.
Okay, 6'4", 315. He'll turn 24 in July. Two-time honorable mention, all Big Ten. His coach describes him as, quote, a jerk on game days. All right, once again, the pattern. You're finding that pattern, that kind of guy who's ultra-mentally tough.
That's why I described Darren, but maybe for the record.
You would know. Don't you sit next to him in the press box?
Yeah.
Okay, oof. All right.
And the radio booth.
Next contract negotiations, you need to negotiate for hazard pay. Sit next to Darren on game, especially if we go to an 18-game season. In fact, more on the 18-game season a little bit later. Remind me to talk about that.
First of all, we're at all the games, whether they're count or they don't, we're there.
Yeah, but you have that little extra edge on regular season games that count.
Tough but fair.
So Isaiah Adams, like Darren, displays the force and attitude teams look for as a block finisher. So
I
just love the description. One more. Possesses an enticing blend of girth and athleticism. Now that's well written. I like that.
I do find, I thought the Isaiah Simmons, ooh, almost slipped there.
Hello.
Yeah, that happened to me once.
Isaiah Adams. I found a lot.
He is kind of Isaiah Adams because he's played guard and full tackles over the years.
That means it gets to stay on the next bingo card. Yes.
Don't make me break that out again.
But I feel like the analysts were all over the map with him. There were some that was like, oh, I really like this pick. And other ones like, that's a terrible pick. There was like 42 guards they should have picked in front of him.
Okay, funny you say that, because you know who was on the board, drafted two picks later by the dreaded Cowboys,
Cooper Beebe,
the two-time Big 12 Offensive Lineman of the Year out of K-State.
But I'm going to say this. Why would the Cardinals take Adams over Beebe if they weren't convicted that Adams was better than Beebe, especially that close? Like, what bothers me about some of the Monday morning quarterbacking, I guess you could call, although it was usually happening in the moment, like, everybody doesn't have them graded the same. Yeah, there were people that had Beebe up there. You know, from where I was looking ahead of time from the outside, that seemed like it would make sense. But we don't know how they're grading. And here's the other part that we don't know. Everybody, I understand Cooper Beebe was whatever he was. He was two-time Big 12 Offensive Lineman of the Year or whatever. But, like, when we talk about the pattern that we were just talking about, we don't know what kind of conversations Cooper Beebe might have had with the Cardinals compared
True.
To Isaiah Adams.
You're right.
No, if they were anywhere close as players, maybe that was a tipping point.
By the way, Jim Nagy, the Senior Bowl director, tweeted 2 days before the draft, our top offensive sleeper this year is Illinois guard tackle Isaiah Adams. This is before the draft. And he said, there's been very little buzz about Adams, which is surprising after he made it look easy at times against top 100 D linemen at the Senior Bowl. My comp for him is former Pro Bowler Jonah Jackson, who the Lions stole in round 3 a few years ago. Okay. All right. Once again, just the intrigue factor.
The intrigue factor. Yes. Because you're sliding into the grades thing that we talked to the very top, and we don't know.
So,
can we talk about the other offensive lineman as well?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
That's a fun story.
Why? Because he's from Texas?
The fact that he didn't play football till what point in high school?
Yeah.
A 6'3 soccer player?
Yeah, that was pretty.
Christian?
And he kind of acknowledged that he wasn't exactly a svelte 6'3 either.
Right.
I was trying to imagine him being on the soccer field.
And the way he tells the story is he enters high school as a freshman. He's one of the biggest dudes on campus as a freshman. Football coach, of course, it's Texas, yells out from across, hey, what's your name and why aren't you playing football? And he said, oh, because I'm a soccer player. I'm going to be on the national team. The coach looked at him, and according to Chris Jones, said, yeah, when that doesn't work out, come find me, and we'll get you some football pads. And then a year later, he went and found the football coach because it wasn't working out.
And then he played in 48 of the 49 games for the Longhorns. And I liked the quote he had when he was talking to the media in his press conference call, was saying how they might be better than me today, but they won't be better than me next week.
Good stuff.
That was good. And again, what does that go to me? That goes to the pattern and the kind of player that they want and the hunger and all that stuff.
But once again, you know, you have a pretty stacked O-line room. I mean, you know, of all these rookies, it's going to be pretty tough for Chris Jones to crack that room, don't you think?
When you look at cornerback and you look at offensive line, somebody's getting released there.
Yeah. Right.
You might not think is getting released, whether it's a draft pick or somebody who's already on the roster. Because they've got too many offensive linemen, and they're going to have too many cornerbacks, and somebody with a recognizable name, at least for us, because we're around the team, is going to not make it, because that's just impossible.
Someone like a Christian Jones, to me, I don't know that it's realistic to expect him to be your swing tackle and win that competition over Kelvin Beachum in year one or year two. To me, this seems like more of that 2 or 3 year development, not necessarily project, but working through those couple years of really fine tuning the skill set and what you're looking for, and kind of more in that realm. Look, the question mark to me that I don't know we're ever going to get answered until we see him out on the field at training camp is, where the heck is John Gaines going to fit, right? Is he going to be your backup center behind Yelda Froholt after you signed Evan Brown in the offseason? Is he going to go out to guard? He's rehabbing his ACL still, so he hasn't been doing the full strength and conditioning program of phase one, and now we're entering phase two.
She needs her John Gaines answers, people.
I do.
I can't remember the last time Danny pounded the table like she just did. I've noticed the elevated energy.
He was playing well. He had earned that second. Yeah. You know, he was your backup center until he tore his ACL in the final preseason game last year.
All right, Danny, we're in the trust tree, right? How many times have you been stymied in your pursuit of information on John Gaines?
I think maybe twice.
That's right.
Maybe I've only asked it once.
Okay, maybe I'll take the I-Team investigation off Darren and we'll put it on John Gaines. Is that what you want? You want us to get to the bottom of this one? Where exactly he is in the rehab and where he stands on the depth chart? Is that what you're saying? That's what we need?
But if you, again, if you flip, we're talking about offensive line, but let's flip to the cornerbacks for a minute.
Okay, let's do it.
I mean, they just drafted three cornerbacks and a safety who could play some nickel, maybe.
Yep.
You know what? If you're Garrett Williams and Starling Thomas and Keytrell Clark.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's extremely real. Well, for at least Keytrell Clark and Starling Thomas.
Yeah. Oh, no. I Garrett Williams.
I'm Garrett Williams made this team. But, .. What if Garrett Williams is one of your best outside corners because Rabbit can play the slot? Can play nickel.
That's fine. I don't have a problem with that.
That's the way it works out. It's intriguing. I know NFL.com, maybe it was Chad Reuter, my three best picks in each round, blah, blah, blah. So the one Arizona Cardinal who was named, it was out of round four, was Dadrian Taylor Demerson, otherwise known as Rabbit. And by the way, his former trainer at Texas Tech is now the Cardinals trainer, Drew. And when I referenced him passing him by in the hallway over draft weekend, I named him Dadrian Taylor Demerson. He looked at me and said, "You mean Rabbit?" So he really is known as Rabbit. So get used to that. I know I'm trying to.
I'm all over it. I'm totally
I'm trying
happy.
To.
This coaching staff, this front office, clearly wants to see competition in that cornerbacks room, having drafted three.
And by the way, Rabbit ran a 4.41, which was the fastest by a safety at the combine.
Rabbit-like.
And he started a bunch of games. However, he was an offensive player until the last 3 years. He was a running back. And so they say he still has a ceiling in terms of him being able to evolve as a defender.
My favorite story from Rabbit when he called was he was talking about when he transitioned at Texas Tech and they said, "We want you to go play defense." And he said, "Are you kidding?" He goes, "Have you seen my offensive tape?" And I'm like, that is the best. I am proud that he would be willing to admit that, yes, I did not want to move, and I was trying desperately not to move.
Yeah, that was good. Well, yeah, he said he played offense his whole life until Texas Tech because he had started somewhere else, and then he transferred.
Utah State.
Utah, okay.
And then a new coach came in. Yeah. He got offered a scholarship. A new coach came in before he even started and said, "Yeah, we're not going to offer you that scholarship anymore," which I know happens, and I just think that's one of the worst things ever is you – a guy gets offered a scholarship and there's some kind of coaching change or whatever, and then they withdraw the scholarship offer. I can't even imagine what that would be like for a kid. Just thought I'd mention that.
But when you look at least his measurables, he's very similar, it appears, in the type of safety that a Jalen Thompson and Buda Baker would be. So I can see why they targeted him and they valued him. If they like their safeties, and arguably it's the best pair of safeties in the NFL, then you know what? You get someone who sort of has that similar look, and you could plug and play and interchange, you know, him in there, even as a rookie. So I'm curious, once again, the intrigue as to how much he can push the issue and get playing time early in this camp and what he looks like in coverage. Obviously, that's going to be a big one, you know. And look, the whole slot corner, nickel corner thing is tough because you get caught in the wash, you're in the traffic, and you're in the box, and can you handle it, and can you avoid the big hit? Now, Tyrann Mathieu was excellent at that. But then after the knee injury, wasn't quite as quick a foot, and sometimes they would get a guy in motion out of the slot, and they would put him in space, and then there are a lot of chunk throws, which is one of the reasons that he ended up changing teams and he ended up changing roles in the NFL. But at a 4.41 40, for a Rabbit and as a rookie, okay, there you go. Now, as for now, one guy I haven't done a ton of intel on is Elijah Jones. So someone help me out. He's the final third round pick, number 90 overall.
BC.
I know he's 6'1.5". I don't know much else other than that. Elijah Jones, what do we know?
I think he's played a lot of games. He's a guy. He's not going to be, I mean, Max Melton, who was their second round pick, is the cornerback that you would think would make the big push to start with Murphy Bunting.
Sure.
But I thought Elijah Jones, I mean, it's noticeable. I mean, he's a guy that like piqued my interest. And the other part about this whole draft, and Jones is a great way to get into this conversation because he was the last third round pick, correct?
Yes.
When we got to the end of the second day, the Cardinals were through seven picks. That's a normal draft. Which, by the way, I felt like I was like, I've been through a whole draft. I've gone through enough players. I don't need to come back Saturday. I mean, I did need to come back Saturday, but I didn't want to.
Well, you had five to go.
But that's when, because they had so many picks, especially in the third round, you forget that they had so many picks in the third round. I mean, any other year, if you're talking about a third round pick, you're talking about a guy that you're expecting to contribute sooner rather than later. And they got four of those guys.
The story JG told the media was that when they had Elijah Jones in the room and they had some video queued up and that they didn't even play it. They didn't even hit play. And he looked, he could see the scoreboard, who they were playing, the time of the game, the situation. And he immediately said, oh yeah, that play. And he started talking about that play. And they said it reminded them of Garrett Williams.
Yep.
And the story on Garrett Williams was he was the final interviewee of that day at the combine. They'd done like 40 interviews. Here comes Garrett Williams. Monty Asavor, Jonathan Gannon tell the story. They're dragging and they're kind of slumped in their seats, going through some initial questions with Garrett Williams. And all of a sudden they're like, whoa, this kid's blowing us away. And pretty soon they're on the edge of their seat. And after the 15 minutes, they're like, we got to get another visit with this guy. And that led them to drafting Garrett Williams. And they said Elijah Jones reminded them in that way that he's a thinking man's corner. Plus, he's 6'1 and a half, and he's able to run. So, okay.
I mean, looking at a couple of highlights, he looks like who you'd want there at cornerback.
Yeah.
But again, because we're talking about third-round picks and second-round picks, I mean, we can talk all day about Harrison and Darius Robinson, who were the first-round picks, and they're the most sexy. But, like, who they got on that second day? You got two cornerbacks in Jones and Max Melton. And we haven't even talked much about Melton, but – you know, and how they ended up there. But, you know, there's a lot of people that think he can be pretty good. And then, of course, you got Danny's guy, Trey Benson, and Tip Ryman. And it's all of a sudden, it's like you could see roles for these guys. And you know, you're going to need guys to play. You know, as if you're watching the video, you see Melton here. And it's like even Marvin Harrison was like, I respect that guy's game right after he got taken. I would love to know for sure if he respects him or if he was just being nice because he
to his new teammate
played against him. But,
right.
You know, this was a position that needed to be addressed. And I know there's a lot of people out there that were like, why didn't you stay at 35 and take Kool-Aid or Cooper DeJean or whatever? And instead you get Max Melton. But my point is we don't know where they had all these guys. And if you had Kool-Aid McKinstry and the Lassiter kid and Max Melton, and they all got grades like between 77 and 79, then you just say, we'll move back because one of them will be there and one of them was.
And you can see by some of these tackles, he doesn't hesitate to come up in run force, which is a must with Jonathan Gannon.
I was gonna say, you got to have that.
So, you know, I mean, that's once again the price of admission with your head coach. He used to be a corners position coach. But then again, he's 5'11", 187. He runs a 4.39 40, one of the faster corners at the combine. And he's ultra confident. You know, remember what he told the media, right? He said, I'm a lockdown corner. I can lock down anybody. So you need the speed and you need the confidence if you're a corner. And then, okay, from there, you try and figure out what exactly. And he said on meeting Jonathan Gannon in the 30 visit that, quote, I knew within 2 minutes that I would fit with this head coach. And he said, I hoped that this would be my head coach. So apparently the feeling was mutual.
Yeah, I like a little bit of that swag from a DB, right? I know we were talking about liking the humility from Marvin Harrison Jr. as a wide receiver, but there's a fine line of confidence and cockiness, and that to me still says more of the confidence and believing in yourself and what you can do, and I kind of want that in a DB. You got to have a little feistiness to you.
Have you ever met a DB that doesn't?
No, okay. That's the point.
By the way, when somebody asked him about the Marvin Harrison Jr., you know, games, he went against the Cardinals' first-round pick. And last year, it was 2023, Marvin Harrison Jr. had 4 catches for 25 yards against Rutgers. Now he had 2 touchdowns. But Max Melton quickly said he only had one of those catches against me. So he made that known to the media. And by the way, 2 years ago, in 22, he had 3 block kicks. And I ran into one of the coaches, and I asked him about that, and they said, you know, there's plenty of fast guys who can get there, but you have to have a knack to actually get your hand on the ball and actually execute the block. And Max Melton told the media when asked about special teams, he said, yeah, I play special teams. He said, no, I really play special teams. I don't go through the motions. Like, I take it seriously.
We haven't even talked about, speaking of special teams, the fact that one of these undrafted free agents that the Cardinals signed, Paul, was a special teamer. Just for you. Long snapper.
Joe Shimkoe, North Carolina State. And yes, I was reading that off the
page. They released Matt Hembro.
Yes, they did. Because until then, they had three long snappers.
Well, Hembro had been hurt.
Oh, yeah, Hembro's been hurt, but I mean, and even technically right now, Shimkoe still hasn't signed because he's got to pass his physical next week. Okay.
So, you know, pending. Darren,
they never really had three.
Come on, Darren, enough with the technicality. Come on. By the way, and then they got Miles Murphy, a D lineman out of North Carolina.
Not to be confused with the Miles Murphy defensive lineman out of Clemson who plays in the NFL.
Yes, that is
spelled
confusing.
Exactly the same, yes. And very disappointingly
yes.
So.
Yes, I did do a double take on that. It was a long draft weekend, and we got to the undrafted guys. I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Huh? I'm like, okay.
I was the same way.
I was like, all right. But Xavier Weaver out of Colorado, very interesting. I mean, he's got a huge following, by the way. Like, people really react to him. I sent out a few things about him.
Really?
Crazy reaction. I mean, the video that I ripped off someone and retweeted got over 60,000 views. So apparently he ran a 4.47 at a 37-inch vertical at his pro day. He spent 4 years at the University of South Florida, then his final year at Colorado last year. And he actually led the Buffs with 68 catches, over 900 yards receiving. And he apparently wasn't the favorite target of Deion Sun at quarterback, but he still made it work. And but yeah, you watch some of his video, you're like, this dude has, at least he's equipped to come in and compete, you would think, between him and Tajon Palmer.
Again, another position where there's going to be a lot of bodies and a lot of competition to fill out the depth chart, and it'll be wide open. I mean, again, Marvin Harrison's on this team, of course. Michael Wilson is on this team, of course. Beyond that, I think Greg Dortch is going to be here, but I think he's going to have to win something.
By the way, I think the only pick we haven't talked about specifically is the other first round pick, Darius Robinson.
M-I-Z, Paul.
What's the deal with the whole? So so if you're alums, it's M-I-Z.
And then the other one yells
K-E-Y.
Okay. Oh, all right, a little bit of disdain from Darren over there. All right, so Miss Mizzou, tell us about Darius Robinson.
Another great first impression from the way he carried himself around the media. To me, this is the type of dog that this coaching staff is looking for, that mentality. He's got the size, he's got the arm length, he's got the motor, he's got the passion that JG likes to have in his defenders, especially up front. There was a clip, I believe it was the presser out in Detroit right after he was drafted, where somebody asked about his process and the details to which Robinson was talking about every day of Sunday was about watching film, getting the massage and lifting. Monday was about watching the pass game from the upcoming opponent. Tuesday was about the run game. And Wednesday, like, it was so detail oriented that you believe Robinson when he tells you he considers himself a technician with this game. In the joint press conference Friday here in Tempe with the two first-round picks, it was asked to the two of them, what do you like to do in your free time? And I thought it was a little, not surprising, but, you know, Harrison was saying, you can tell he's more of a quiet, introverted person of, I really just kind of like to hang out in my apartment and watch movies. And Robinson was saying, I mean, for me, it's still football. That's what I like to do. It's football and it's being in the community, because Robinson, I mean, like Paris Johnson Jr., started his own foundation in college supporting underserved families, which I think is pretty cool and fits the culture and the mold that they're looking for in these players. But I thought that, okay, it makes sense. They want players who love ball, and it's very clear that D-Rob loves ball. And he has the versatility. He spent the first 4 years at Mizzou on the inside and then moved out to the outside this last year, racked up some pretty impressive stats of like 14 tackles for loss of like the 43 or 48 tackles he had, 8.5 sacks. So I think that versatility is also very intriguing and attractive to this coaching staff.
I mean, that closing speed he just showed right there against Florida off the edge, right? Here's a guy who played his first 3 years on the interior. They asked him to move outside. He did. Ended up first team all SEC. So you can see why the Cardinals were attracted to him, because they value that versatility in defensive linemen. They've said that repeatedly. They showed that last year. I mean, just look at all the difference they've run. Three-man fronts, four-man fronts, five-man fronts. There were third and long, obvious passing situations where nobody had a hand in the dirt. Guys are walking around. I mean, they did anything and everything in terms of scheme. with their defensive linemen. Now you got a guy who's ultra intelligent, plus he's 6'5", 285, could put on more weight if needed, he said. And then when he came into the radio studio and we did a one-on-one interview, I asked him, all right, every single player has something in their scouting report that they take issue with. What was it for you? He said, you know what? I didn't like the fact everyone made a big deal about my Senior Bowl week, where he was voted player of the week, practice player of the week. He said, as if like I turned it on for that week. No, that's me every week. So I thought that was an interesting beef he had.
That is interesting. He's a guy that it felt like, and circling back to where we were at the very beginning, that there's been a lot of different opinions on the grade the Cardinals get for taking Darius Robinson in the first round. And it'll be interesting to see where it goes. But again, and I was thinking this before the draft, I think we talked about it, like when you start getting to 22, 23, 24 and beyond, if you go look in the draft every year, it is very hit and miss in that range. From like those last 7 to 10 picks of the first round are, you don't know what you're going to get, which is weird because I don't know if the hit rate's any better at the beginning of the second round or not, but it'll be fascinating to see what happens with him because you get that first round tag on you. The expectations are automatically better. People are going to expect Darius Robinson to be a better pro for a long time, more than Max Melton. Because one was in the first round and one was in the second round. That's just reality. Yeah.
Well, he was the second interior D lineman drafted after Byron Murphy II. So that's quite an honor. And you were drafted ahead of guys like Braden Fisk, who's going to be in your division. He went to the Rams. Rams ended up with Jared Verse, Braden Fisk. They got Blake Corum, the running back out of Michigan. Rams had themselves a draft from all
appearances. For not knowing what to do with the first round
right.
pick.
Without having any experience, recent right. history, right? But in terms of Darius Robinson, too, something that's been cited is he didn't even play football until his junior year of high school. So for 5 or 6 years he spent at Mizzou, they still feel like, okay, you know, if he puts on a little bit more weight, if he's more of an interior D lineman and he said the words obsessed with football more than once in describing himself. Okay, what sort of upside is still there on a Darius Robinson?
I liked when he was talking about how he got his master's degree and Marvin whipped his head around and was like, or he had 2 degrees in his master's. He was like, 2 degrees?
Right, yeah.
Come on, man.
Yeah.
And you could tell, I mean, it was fun for them to do that press conference together of Robinson talking about like, I'm sitting on stage next to Marvin Harrison Jr. And of course he's wearing his blinged out Cotton Bowl ring and that he already had a little fun about Mizzou being, you know, beating Ohio State there, but making clear, okay, well, Marvin didn't play in that game, so let's keep that in mind. Yep. You know, we were selfishly glad, you know, Mizzou was. D-Rob was saying that Harrison did not play in that game.
So to come full circle, think of how different this D-line room looks when you have Justin Jones, Bilal Nichols, LJ Collier back and healthy, former first-round pick himself, Darius Robinson. You added Mack Wilson, who's going to be off the edge at times, compared to the way you ended last year when you look on the Cardinals bench in week 17 and 18, and you saw a collection of Naquan Jones and Ben Stilley and Phil Hoskins. They were just the D and D line stood for decimated. So it's going to be quite a different feel and look in that D line room, and we'll see how it translates into play, especially in the division. Where, yes, the Rams and Kyron Williams, and yes, you know, Kyle Shanahan in that Niners run game with Christian McCaffrey, and the two highly drafted running backs for the Seahawks, how they love to pound the rock in your own division. So there is that.
What were we supposed to remind you about before the end of the podcast?
Oh, yes, it was the schedule. Where is it here? Did you see?
Schedule's not out yet, Paul.
No, the future schedule and how it's going to look. Roger Goodell ended up on the Pat McAfee show and just out of nowhere casually dropped that quote, he is considering moving the Super Bowl, right, so it falls on the Sunday during the 3-day President's Day weekend. And then he went on to say that he's not a fan of the preseason, which he said repeatedly before, and that the time has come for 18 games.
With a second bye week?
Perhaps. Some people figure that with 2 byes, it takes you past the President's Day weekend. Unless you were to start Labor Day weekend. But with 1 bye in 18 games and you start Labor Day weekend, it would end up on President's Day weekend, the Super Bowl.
Still only one bye, though?
So between President's Day weekend being the future home of the Super Bowl, because everybody would have Monday off, it would really make it a Super Sunday.
We wouldn't have Monday off.
And a national holiday. And then you would get that 18th game and eliminate one more preseason game. Now, there's long been speculation, and Roger Goodell's hinted at this as well, every single team with 18 games would have an international game. And then the upside to the NFL.
That will happen.
Yeah, that's coming.
And then most likely, Danny, you would have a second bye. It would be in conjunction with your international game.
Okay, we need to, there's so, one.
This
one,
is where it's all evolving.
Well, first of all, 18 games was always where it was headed.
Yeah.
He may have not, we always knew that that's what they were trying to
this
get
to. This
is
where I get admonished.
Of course.
Yeah.
The other problem right now, they just signed the CBA whenever they signed it, and you cannot go to 18 games without working with the union. And the new CBA isn't up till when?
March of 2030.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah.
Didn't in 2021 when they went to 17 games, did they need a new CBA to enact that? Didn't he do that outside the CBA negotiations?
No, I think it was part of the new, I could be wrong, but I think it was part of it. And the other part of it is they have the option, like they did the last time, to end the CBA early to reopen negotiations. But if you do that, that means you have the threat of the CBA running out without an agreement, and then you have work stoppage.
Well, I did run into the following. Even though you have long-term TV deals that were just signed past 2030, there's an opt-out for the NFL at the end of the 2029 season to go in conjunction with the CBA that runs out in March of 2030. So Raj, he's got it figured in. He's linked everything in here at once, trending towards 2030. The TV deals, the CBA, everything else. And by the way, McAfee asked him about, you know, Raj, what's going on? Scrooge on, Christmas and, you know, the holidays and everything. Roger Goodell's response was, holidays are what we do. I don't ask permission for that. We go where the fans are. End quote. The commissioner on putting games on a Wednesday, Christmas Day. So if you're the NBA and other leagues, guess what? Because that President's Day weekend, by the way, is also when the NBA always does its All-Star weekend. And when NASCAR does Daytona.
Oof.
So guess what?
It would be
scorched earth. They're coming for your weekend.
Oof.
So there's that.
Wonder how that would change the combine.
Yeah. But it's coming. The international game for every single team is coming, because then the NFL, what they're going to do is they're going to sell the international TV packages to the BBC and Sky Sports and everything else.
The thing about the international game is you can implement that now, because it would really be easy with 17 games, because then each team would get 8 away, 8 home, and 1 international. And then you wouldn't even have to worry about it. With 18 games, do you give 2 international games, or are you back to where somebody gets messed every year?
Doesn't Jacksonville already do that? They stay out there for 2 weeks in London?
That's a whole different thing. They got owners that own a soccer team.
Yeah. By the way, there is a chance the Cardinals still get an international game 2024, right?
When is schedule release? May 10th?
Darren, you should know that. Come on now, Darren. When is schedule release?
They do not have an official date yet.
Yes, they do. We're just not on a need-to-know basis.
We're not
that's
in the
all.
Email
yeah,
thread, Paul.
That's right. They have a date. We're not aware of it. So,
okay. Mid-May, Paul.
Mid-May. Okay, that's good. All right.
Sounds about May 10th.
Yeah. So, and by the way, remember I talked, and this is the last thing, and I'll officially shut it. The whole resort fee, you know, user fee, the whole thing, fee enacted, you know. There was one that was set up over draft weekend. It just wasn't in the NFL draft because there wasn't any sort of Mondo trade where, you know, Trey Lance, 3 first-round picks or anything. Did you see where the city of Venice enacted a 5 euro day trip fee for anyone to visit Venice?
No.
And there were a bunch of tourists. Protests, people protesting, screaming, you can't impose an entrance fee to a city. All you're doing is transforming your city into a theme park.
It kind of already is, though.
Yeah. They say there's actually more.
There's too many people in Venice.
Yeah, I've never been, but they say there are now officially more hotel beds than there are residents in Venice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tourism is more than just the lifeblood. It's the apparent occupancy of the city at this point. So... No real good way.
There's water there, Paul.
Yeah, you're right.
An eggplant pond.
Yeah. And there's also water.
Eggplant parm.
There's also water right here as we wrap up this edition of Cardinals Underground, brought to you by Pacific Office Automation.